Good morning. The Constitutional Rights, Rule of Law, and Government Operations Subcommittee will now come to order. Lexi, please call the roll.
Chair Roach.
Present.
Representatives Bankston.
Here.
Brackett.
Here.
Brannon, excused. Cross.
Here.
Edmonds. Jacques.
Here.
Joseph.
Here.
Lopez.
Here.
Plakin.
Here.
Porras.
Here.
Roth.
Here.
Trunau.
Here.
Waldron, excused. Yarkovsky. Quorum is present.
Thank you, Lexi. Members, please ensure that your cell phones are off or placed in silent mode. Today, we have a presentation by the Division of Emergency Management, Director Kevin Guthrie. And I wanted to, Director, you're welcome to approach the podium, but I wanted to give you members a quick bio. I know that many of us have seen Director Guthrie in other committees as well, but I wanted to tell you a little bit about him and how he ended up here. He's got 30 years of experience in public safety and emergency management in the state of Florida. 14 years dedicated solely to emergency management. He spent 23 years as a police officer and emergency preparedness coordinator with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, served as the public safety and emergency management director for Flagler County, then as the assistant county administrator for public safety for Pasco County. He served in numerous roles with the Florida Division of Emergency Management, chief of staff, state emergency response team chief, deputy director, and now executive director. And Director Guthrie, I have mixed feelings when I see you because we spent a lot of time together down in Southwest Florida. Thank you for that. And I understand that parts of South Florida had about 7 inches of rain yesterday and saw some flooding on the news. I would ask you if you feel so inclined, you could start by providing the committee an update on what happened there. You're recognized, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today, Chair. Over the last 24 to 36 hours, we had a low pressure system that was in between two larger systems, one that was coming off the coast of Texas, one that is down in the Yucatan Peninsula. Both of those showed signs of potential development into a tropical system, but this particular low pressure system did not. However, the National Hurricane Center is obviously looking at this particular system as it moves off the coast of Florida today, and it may develop into something. We had significant amounts of rainfall. Ocean Reef and North Key Largo saw more rain than they've ever seen before in a 24-hour period. Anecdotally, you've heard 7 inches. We're receiving some potential reports of up to 10 in areas. Literally on the way up the steps this morning, we were contacted by Miami-Dade Emergency Management Director Pete Gomez, who has reported that Homestead is starting to see crop damage from the excessive amount of rainfall in the city of Homestead and the areas around that. So we're going to be putting together a team. I've already spoke to the governor this morning as well as Commissioner Simpson about the situation. We will be sending down a damage assessment team to start those damage assessments of the crops in the general area down there. We are going to talk about the declaration process today in one of my slides in detail, but this would follow a different path of going down what's referred to as a small business administration declaration. It's a completely different one, one that we don't have slides on today, but I'll be more than happy to talk about the differences between the SBA deck in real time based on a disaster we're having right now and the actual full-blown FEMA emergency management and, emergency declaration and major declaration process. But that, I'll kind of stop there, Chair, if you would like, just see if there's any specific question. I think we have one or two that are from South Florida that may have some specific questions.
Members, we have questions on the events that are unfolding now in South Florida. Ranking Member, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being with us this morning. So what are your plans to address, whether it's the crop damage or anything else, in the immediate term? And then in the long term, have you ever looked into any of the water management systems that they have where you create not necessarily irrigation systems, but things so that the soil can start to absorb it more or you can redirect it for different ways throughout the state? I mean, it's not as much in parts in my district, but in the areas where you have a lot of farmland, that is a concern. And I've seen some very innovative options in other states.
You're recognized, sir.
So thank you for the question, Ranking Member. The short answer is yes, we have tons of money that we have dumped into Southeast Florida, specifically Tamiami Canal. That is a project that was overseen by the South Florida Water Management District, as well as Miami-Dade, the Florida Division of Emergency Management. Millions of dollars went into creating a lot of those runoff systems that help South Florida manage the water. South Florida Water Management District also has, again, I had to get our team to get you the specific details on it, but they are a finalist in what's referred to as the Federal Building Resilient Infrastructure Communities, or BRIC grant, for around $45 to $50 million, if I'm not mistaken, on some high flow pumps to help out in that general area. So the typical standard technology that you would use, which is canals and pumps, they are continuing to build out that capability as well as enhance that capability. That's done through, obviously, the South Florida Water Management District is the applicant for that particular grant in conjunction with the Department of Environmental Protection. I know that Secretary Hamilton is on top of all of those issues, working alongside the Water Management District as well as the county officials to make sure that we're moving water as much as we possibly can. The areas that you have standing water in the area are typically from aging infrastructure. Like we take Brickell, for example. Brickell always floods. That's one of those things we always know it's going to flood. That is an aging infrastructure in that area that's going to have to be addressed by city, county, et cetera, on changing that aging infrastructure out. They can obviously apply for federal grants. They can obviously apply for appropriations through members like yourself to help get them on the path to being there. But we're certainly going to have to look at it's got to be a whole of community approach from cities and counties to the state doing what we're doing, as well as the federal government, to ultimately move that water from the local community all the way out to the Gulf.
Members of the questions?
I know I asked two questions, so it might have got lost. The short term for the folks, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. The short term for the agricultural, we will attempt to open up, and through the federal government, the Small Business Administration loans. That's done in conjunction with Florida Commerce. They were a teaming partner with us on Small Business Administration declarations. And then simultaneously in a parallel vein that usually takes a much, much longer time is the USDA declaration. We have been waiting over a year for a USDA declaration on Hurricane Ian. We still do not have. So the USDA side of the house is a much more bureaucratic and lengthy process. So the short term will be Small Business Administration. The longer term will be working through USDA to potentially get disaster assistance. Now, I will caveat all of that with, I have not been there. I have not seen the damage. We're just getting reports from Miami-Dade Emergency Management, which is on the way there now to see the damage themselves and then ask for our assistant to come down and do joint damage assessment.
Thank you. Once you do have that information, whether it's for the small businesses or anything else that us, the members of the committee or specific members that represent those areas can get out to the community, for example, through social media, I know in the past we've done things like that. If you wouldn't mind getting that perhaps to the chair so he can get it to us and we can get it to the public, that would be much appreciated.
Thank you. And members, if there's no further questions, we will resume with our regularly scheduled broadcast. And Director, you're recognized to proceed.
All right. Thank you, Chair. One of the things that we were asked to go into a little more detail about, and again, I'll intertwine the Small Business Administration Declaration into this, is the emergency declaration process. So I'm actually going to start with the bottom of this slide first and then go up to the top and intertwine the Small Business Administration into this. So State Statute 252.36 sets the requirements for emergency managers throughout the state, as well as 35 does for the governor and myself. The State Watch Office is a 24/7, 365 operation that we have in our State Emergency Operations Center. I always tell people it's where disasters start and where disasters ultimately end. We'll come through that State Watch Office. So we receive an incident or notification about an actual or imminent event. Also combined within that State Watch Office are four meteorologists that are constantly watching the tropics and things this time of year. So again, it either gets phoned into us or it's developing, through our meteorologists to let us know that there's an impending event that's coming up. From that point, when we see that initial notification, we initiate our comprehensive emergency management plan. Now I wanna make sure that you all understand there's things like we're doing today, which we receive notification in our state watch office, and we never activate the EOC because it's such a localized event or a small event in a highly capable county like a Miami-Dade, like a Broward County. They got more than enough resources to respond to that, and we don't need to activate our state EOC up here, although Broward County and Fort Lauderdale activated their EOC today. So we will have a response that's recognized and authorized, if you will, inside of our comprehensive emergency management plan, and then we move on to the next step. If we require some type of state of emergency, I will consult the governor. I'll let him know the situation and make a request that he consider a state of emergency for the state of Florida. So I have that conversation. If we're authorized, we will draft an executive order for the governor's approval. That will go through our legal shop down to the governor's legal shop. That will then ultimately go into the governor's chief of staff and up to the governor for signature. And then we, at that point, we have a state of Florida declaration. I think I want to take a pause here for just a second and say, this is the way the state runs. Cities and counties, and I was with the Florida Association of Counties yesterday and I mentioned this, we should never have a situation in the state of Florida where a city or a county has a whereas clause in their local emergency declaration that says, whereas the state of Florida has declared a state of emergency. That's not the way the system runs. That's not the way the Florida Constitution runs. Cities declare emergencies, asking the county for assistance. The county would declare an emergency, asking for assistance. And then based on a certain number, and you know, that number could vary based on rural area versus metropolitan area. When the state of Florida has exceeded our capability and we need to declare a state of emergency, we would then declare a state of emergency. That is not the way things typically run in the state of Florida. We see this all the time. It says, whereas the state of Florida has declared a state of emergency. That's reverse order. It should be cities lead to counties, lead to a state declaration, leads to a federal declaration. So that's something we're working on with our cities and counties. We've had previous administrations that have declared state of emergency for all 67 counties in the state of Florida when a disaster happens or when a storm is approaching. I think you've noticed that this governor tries not to do that. We try to limit the number of counties to exactly what is going to be impacted. And that's a fundamental change. So again, if you would go back to your cities and counties and say, look, you need to be taking the protective actions that you need to take on your own, and then that will drive what the state's response will be and what that looks like. Up to the federal level, once we have made a local declaration here in the state of Florida for the Federal Stafford Act, not the Small Business Administration declaration, but the Federal Stafford Act. So this is the big one signed by the president. We have an incident. Based on our declaration, what happens at the next point in time is initial damage assessment must occur. If we have an Achilles heel at the county level, it is initial damage assessments. We have some counties that have plenty of people to go out and do it. We have some counties that have no people to go out and do it. What this is a rapid identification of what houses and businesses fall into one of four categories: affected, minor, major, or destroyed. Destroyed means basically 50% or more of that house or that business is gone and is going to have to be bulldozed down and rebuilt. Major is typically it has one or two major shifts. So the roof is blown off and it's shifted on its foundation would be actually a destroyed. Roof blows off, that's a major. Foundation shift, that's a major. If we have water or windows and doors that have been blown off, that would fall into most likely the minor. And then affected means you got some type of debris or some type of water on the property. While we focus everything into four major categories, it's really the only two that we look at in a windshield assessment or an initial damage assessment is the major and destroyed. That's what FEMA wants to know about. So we will give them and say, look, we have 600, we have 1,000, we have 10,000 major and destroyed. That will then lead to the next block, and that is the joint preliminary damage assessment. When we get all of the counties, and all means all, and that's all that all means, when we get all of the counties' initial damage assessment in, we can move to the next step. FEMA does not like to come down. They will, and they have done this for us on occasion. They will come down even though we don't have all the counties with their reporting data back. We have had situations where we have waited on cities and counties to give us that initial damage assessment for weeks. This is something that's supposed to be done in the first 72 hours. So if people ask you, why is it taking FEMA so long? And I will tell you right now at this podium, FEMA is an excellent partner in the state of Florida. We have 28 open disasters, and they work very, very well with us. But they can't do what they need to do until we get city and county initial damage assessments. That's got to be a focus of cities and counties at the very beginning. That is typically the biggest delay in the declaration process at the federal level, is waiting on city and county information. Once we have all, and again, all means all, and that's all that all means, once we get all of the city and county information, then we can move to the joint preliminary damage assessment. At that point in time, a county representative, a state representative, and a federal representative will go and look at every one of those pieces of property. And once a magic number, and I don't know what the magic number is, that FEMA says, we're done, we've got enough information, we'll take it back to the House and get everything written up, that is when they will make their recommendation for a major disaster declaration in the state of Florida. So that is the nuts and bolts of how that works. It doesn't have to do with anything about how many trees are in the middle of the road or whether ports are closed or anything like that. It all comes down to homes and businesses and their parcel of land as to how much damage they have on their parcel of land. I promise you every other slide, Chairman, will not take that much detail. This is another way to look at the at that same process with some notes below each level. Again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide, but this basically puts the words into what I just talked about. Again, at local level, they got to coordinate their emergency response in their political jurisdictions and get all of that data gathered. We do not take, for example, in a Broward County, since they're being impacted this morning, I think it's 31 cities in Broward County. We don't interact with the 31 cities. Broward County has to get the 31 cities' information, and then we deal with one single entity. But if one municipality has not reported, then all the other municipalities are still waiting on that last municipality. So, again, they coordinate that at the local level, and then they activate any statewide mutual aid that they may need, request any assistance from us. State, we exhaust all of the local emergency response capabilities, resource capabilities. We move into what's referred to as EMAC, the Emergency Management Assistance Compact. That's where we start pulling resources from other states into the state of Florida. Hurricane Ian, we pulled in 33 other states to help us respond to our disaster. And then at the presidential level, you see some information there about they confirm that the governor does have and has taken the appropriate actions, and then they look at the estimate of the amount and ultimately certify what the state is reporting. Another way to look at this, and I gave you three different ways depending on which you work best in. So again, we always say disasters are local, they're at the bottom of the pyramid. So local state of emergency is a way that's supposed to be done. Cities and counties declare a local emergency. Through their comprehensive emergency management plan, they are executing it. They have their own local authorities and emergency powers. They have their own local ordinances that they should be waiving. Again, that is not the way that we typically do business in Florida. As a former local emergency manager, there was a running joke of us in the Tampa Bay region when I was in Tampa or in the Tampa Bay region. You don't want to be the first emergency manager to declare, but you don't want to be the last one either. So that's a mentality that we got to stop. And if you need to take emergency protective actions in your city or your county, you need to declare a local emergency. At the state of emergencies declared at the state level, again, we execute all the things I've already reported out on. The Presidential Emergency Declaration. So this is the first time we've seen this. The Presidential Emergency Declaration is also referred to in Florida as a pre-landfall declaration. What this does is it allows cities and counties to know going into something like a hurricane, when we have an EM declaration, that there is going to be certain costs that will be covered. No matter what the number is, it will be covered. So we always try to get a pre-landfall declaration so that we know, and our sheriffs, police chiefs, fire chiefs, public works, electrical companies know that, yes, you're going to incur expenses to come out and start getting things done. The EM declaration covers that. And then we convert that 9 times out of 10 over into a major disaster declaration at the top. Now, you'll see up there at the top, under Presidential Major Disaster Declaration, you see individual assistance, including individuals, household program, crisis counseling, disaster case management, disaster legal services, disaster unemployment, DSNAP. And one thing that is not mentioned there, and I'm sorry for this, but Small Business Administration. So SBA loans get turned on also at that level. What's happening right now in South Florida will not rise to the level of a major disaster declaration or an emergency declaration. What will probably happen is if we have 25 businesses or more that are underinsured or not insured and have suffered losses, then we will qualify for a Small Business Administration declaration. This typically happens in just about every flood we have, every situation where we have agricultural problems. We usually get an SBA declaration turned on through Florida Commerce. Myself and, in that role, Secretary Alex Kelly will work together to get those things done and actualized. And then if there is a potential of a USDA declaration, that'll come through the U.S. Department of Agriculture or the governor's office, or maybe, again, in joint working to make that request. Again, that takes months and in some cases years for those to come through. I'm going to just briefly go through Hurricanes Idalia, Ian, and Nicole on what we've done. So this is how we get how we make the sauce and how we get to the point of a declaration. Once we have a declaration, here's some examples of what we have done. Hurricane Idalia, our immediate response logistics, FDM mobilized requested resources to support residents and first responders across the state of Florida. In the infrastructure vein, this is the third time that we've done this. We were successful at this in Ian, Nicole, and Idalia. 90% of the utility accounts were turned back on within 2 to 3 days. Now, in Idalia, it was a more remote area. It took us about 3 days to get to 90%. In Hurricane Ian, I've got a graphic on it, but I'll go ahead and share it now. We had 2.8 million customers without accounts. We had 2 million of those customers turned back on in 48 hours. Human services, we had more than 220,000 meals, 150,000 bottles of water, 3,000 tarps were distributed at local county points of distribution. And then we coordinate, collaborate, and communicate, which is our mission statement at the division, with our partner agencies and nonprofits who all played integral roles in the Idalia response and ongoing recovery. Let me catch up with my notes, as my legislative affairs director said, don't get ahead of your notes. So, all right. Hurricane Idalia continued. Here's where we're at in Hurricane Idalia. Our recovery has continued to be one of the fastest recoveries on record, competing again with Hurricane Ian and Nicole. We have changed a lot of policies and procedures. We have, I say this often, we were always good at preparing to respond to disasters in the state of Florida, including our county and city emergency managers, but we are now focusing on preparing to recover. We want to put that same emphasis on preparing to respond and put that into preparing to recover. We have gone very, very proactive at the division through technology, through the TED, our TED appropriations in the House and Senate, who has invested in us quite a bit over the last 2 or 3 years with technology, and we have sped that process up. To date, and I think today is either day 86 or 87 post-Hurricane Idalia, we have already obligated $273 million in federal assistance. The fastest we have ever done that before was Hurricane Michael, and it was at 93, 94 days to get the first set of money out, and it was low-dollar money. It was like $10 million. So to have hundreds of millions of dollars at day number 87 into fiscally constrained counties is certainly a testament to the recovery staff at the Florida Division of Emergency Management. I appreciate everything that they've done to get that done. State Non-Congregate Sheltering Program, that's a fancy legal title for travel trailers run by the state. Once again, we ran the first ever travel trailer program as a part of Hurricane Ian. We thought we were really, really fast getting travel trailers into the area by like 4 or 5 months. I'm happy to let you know the first trailer installed for Hurricane Idalia based on lessons we learned from Hurricane Ian. We had the first trailer installed in 36 hours. So again, the team continues to be extremely fast. One thing that we had to do in this particular disaster that we've never done before in the history of the state of Florida is create a volunteer village. For those that are familiar with the Big Bend area, and there are a number of fiscally constrained counties that were hit by this particular disaster. So in Mayo or Lafayette County, We provided a volunteer village or lodging in not travel trailers, but bunk style trailers in that in a park there, which now all of the volunteers that we're depending on to get work done, like Team Rubicon, the Mennonites, the Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, et cetera, they now have a place to come in the disaster area and stay so that they don't waste 2 hours traveling from Alachua County or Jacksonville or Tallahassee on a day-to-day basis to get into area to do that work. We get much more time on target with the shorter daylight hours now of getting our volunteers to do things. So that's something we've done as a Florida first, and we will probably continue to do that in physically constrained counties and areas in the near future. Our hazard mitigation program, at the 12-month period of a disaster, day 365 from the date of a disaster, the Florida Division of Emergency Management will get 20% of all individual assistance funding and public assistance funding that has been obligated to the disaster by FEMA. We will get an additional 20% to use for mitigation funding. Right now, again, being as fast as we are for this, and we call this for us a small disaster, we are looking at getting $241 million in resiliency or mitigation funding just for these 15 counties, which is going to go a long way to help them build up their infrastructure in the future. So
I'm going to let the director finish his presentation, then we'll go into questions.
And Chair, I think I've got three more slides, so I'll try to do this very quickly. This particular slide tells us exactly where we're at on each storm. So for Hurricane Idalia, we're in the intermediate phase there. We're in the weeks to months. Ian, although we are past 1 year, Ian was a storm that impacted 910,000 households across the state of Florida from Key West all the way through to St. Johns County. So we're, you know, just the magnitude of that storm, we're moving that storm a little bit slower as it relates to the grand scheme of things. And then Hurricane Nicole, much smaller storm, impacted about 5 counties on Florida's East Coast. We are much further ahead where we are in that particular disaster. Hurricane Ian, again, this will go rather quickly, but in Hurricane Ian, we did the first ever Unite Florida Recovery Portal where we allowed people to come and register for stuff that they needed. In public assistance, in 344 days, we obligated $1.8 billion in federal disaster funding to cities and counties. We have never done that much in 1 year ever in the history of the state of Florida. And we did that again by engaging technology to help us get faster at what we do. We also have an additional $2.4 billion that is including another $88 million for FDEM that helps obviously with GR. We're happy that we're being able to get so much faster at what we're doing. Based on that speed, we have yet another record-setting situation down at the bottom. I talked to you about the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, which is at 365 days. We get 20% of all individual assistance funding and public assistance funding. We get 20% of that number that's obligated. Folks, that's $1.16 billion in mitigation resiliency funding coming into the division for those counties. In retrospect, the highest we have ever received was just over $700 million for Hurricane Irma. So we got an additional $500 million to help out with individuals and their recovery. Ongoing recovery and mitigation that's going on right now in Hurricane Nicole. First time ever we utilized, as you see in the picture there, the flood control systems. Those flood control systems, we deployed about 13,000 feet of tubing across the state of Florida to help protect the shoreline so that people could start their recovery. That's the first time we've ever done it. I will tell you that is not the way that product is designed to be used, but it was a temporary Band-Aid to help us prevent further damage from happening. So we were glad that we were able to do that. That Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, as I mentioned in the previous slides, we got $47 million for that particular grant. That particular disaster, Hurricane Nicole. So in conclusion, I appreciate the opportunity to come and give you that high-level brief of Hurricanes Ian, Idalia, and Nicole, as well as the disaster declaration process. My Legislative Affairs Director, Amelia Johnson's information is there, and if you have any follow-ups that you may need from us, please make sure you contact her, have your staff contact her, and we will certainly get that information to you. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Ranking Member, or excuse me, Vice Chair Roth, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. And I really appreciate the presentation. You did it as fast as a New York minute. I just want you to know that. You could have gone a little slower. But one of the things I was trying to figure out as you were talking is it occurred to me that we do have funds that the state has given to the governor, you know, for disaster assistance. You know, we put money aside. So when you're talking about all these numbers, are all these numbers FEMA dollars and that you're getting from outside the state, or is some of it also state dollars?
You recognize, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question, Vice Chair. So very quickly, I'm going to try to animate this with my hands. The federal government will not reimburse us any money until we have paid out our vendors and use that money, and then we do reimbursement. FEMA is always a reimbursement program. It is not a cash up front program. So the $500 million that the legislature did, I think it was 2-3 years ago, and continues to fund, that is our, what we call at the division, layman's terms, our startup cash. So we start to respond with that pot of money. We start to pay our bills. We help other agencies pay their bills so that then we can start that reimbursement process through FEMA. As noted on this slide here, for third bullet point down, we have been able to use that $500 million pot to go ahead and obligate by FEMA $1.8 billion. In other words, we have recycled that money so much in that $500 million pot that we have been able to do three times that just on Hurricane Ian alone. So we do that also on Hurricane Idalia, Hurricane Nicole. Now, some of our other programs, such as the Operation Vigilant Century, that is not a federal reimbursable program. Now, we are probably going to try to get reimbursement out of the federal government for that, but right now that is not a FEMA reimbursable program, so that is money out that will not come back in.
You have a follow-up, please?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, for example, you did a good job, but you didn't exactly answer my question. For example, you did say $273 million for Idalia in 87 days. So you're saying all that money was your state money, and it will be reimbursed.
Yes, sir. So on Idalia specifically, you see that we have already obligated, we've already paid out $273 million out of that $500 million pot, right. And FEMA has now obligated us $273 million back. So that came out of our general revenue, or I should say general revenue, that came out of the Emergency Preparedness and Response Trust Fund, and then it was money paid back to the state for our actions.
Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for this presentation. It's really, really fascinating to see how this process works. I want to look at what you talked about at the city level, the city and county level, and trying to get an accurate assessment of the major and destroyed structures within 72 hours. What's the biggest impediment to that? Is it lack of certified or trained personnel? And are there, you know, we see linemen who are, you know, staging for these type of disasters. Are there similar things that can be done sharing, you know, personnel within different jurisdictions?
You recognize.
Thank you, ma'am, for the question. And it's an excellent question because, again, people say, well, you got 47,000 linemen that are staged, and when they're driving in, they can give you that assessment. And in theory, that is true. They can give us an assessment up to the point of the pole that they stop at. So they may stop on the outskirts of a city and have driven through a rural area, and they start working on poles as they start coming into contact with those poles. So they can give us a damage assessment, if you will, to a certain degree. A lot of cities and counties will use their sheriff's offices and their fire departments to do this, but same chicken egg problem. Police officers, being a former one, and firefighters, once they encounter a problem, they're going to stop. They're not going to worry about counting houses and counting damage. They're going to start working to either save a person's life, secure a situation. So therefore, they are not necessarily the best people to do this. To the heart of your question, it's a bandwidth problem at the city and county level. They would typically use, you know, in Pasco County, Flagler County, where I came from, everybody in county government was an essential employee, every single person. Now, I will tell you, Pasco and Flag are not the norm. Typically, that's going to be your public works folks, your public safety folks, but like your librarians, your other park staff are not going to go anywhere. In Pasco County and in Flagler County, we cross-trained our park staff, our librarians, and other staff to go out and be able to do some of these activities to where we're not going to open the library, we're not going to open the park, but we'll use those individuals to go do that windshield assessment and just say, hey, look, does it look really bad? That's a destroyed. Does it look kind of bad? That's a major. And there's some technical stuff that you can teach in about 2 hours to arm individuals to go out and do this. But overwhelmingly, it's a bandwidth issue. Flagler and Pasco, we had the staff, you know, 10,000 or so people in Pasco County that we could reach down and start collecting individuals to go do this. A Bradford County is not going to be able to do that. So it really boils down to a bandwidth issue. And then if you get into the smaller cities, then you start to, again, have a smaller bandwidth and a bigger issue.
Representative Bankson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation today. I'm not sure exactly how to answer this or whether you can or ask this, whether you can answer this, but does the catastrophic relief that we know that comes from these situations weigh into the insurance industry on how they mitigate their risk? Or literally, how does this affect the big picture for the insurance recovery?
I'm looking for a stat. I may have to turn to my chief of staff for that stat. NOAA has stated that this is going to be, I got it right here, that this will be the third costliest, Ian will be the third costliest hurricane to ever hit the United States on record, estimating that the amount of damage is $112.9 billion. I will tell you, I'm going to give you that big number to then back into a couple of other numbers. Of that $112 or $113 billion, the state and local government portion of that on what we expend is probably going to be in the neighborhood of FEMA reimbursable dollars, about $7 billion. That's what we have estimated. That's what FEMA has estimated it's going to be at the city and county level. So if you take the $7 billion out of the $113 billion, now you see the potential impact to uninsured, insured properties, and so on. I don't know exactly how many people are insured in the state of Florida. There's some non-scientific data out there that says it was about half, give or take, that are underinsured versus fully insured versus non-insured. But what I can tell you definitively is 113 minus 7, the math in my head real quick is like 106, says that that's going to be what's on the insurance industry or the underinsured, uninsured industry of the state of Florida. I think that answers your question.
Representative Jacques.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Guthrie, I just want to thank you and commend you for your great work, all over your career, but certainly during this last storm in Idalia. I represent Pinellas County, where it initially seemed like we were on the crosshairs, and so we relied heavily, based on the information that your office was putting out, and it was very helpful. You were on the ground there in Pinellas, came to our EOC, which is in my district, and the resources that were available, everything from financial assistance, the tracking of the storm, evacuation procedures, certainly helped me to communicate that to our constituents. And so I commend you and ask you to continue that, because it's so helpful that we can put those things quickly on our channels and people know that our offices can be a resource. But really, I was getting the information from you all, and it was quick and on point and timely. And so kudos to you, and keep up the great work.
Thank you, Representative. I want to, because Representative focuses on Pinellas County, the bigger the county, the more dense it is, the more houses and more damage you're going to have to qualify for declaration. I did not put that in my initial impact. Smaller county is going to have less impact, obviously, because of population. But when we go into a Hillsborough or a Pinellas County, that they had to get much more in the way of damage estimates before they, as a county, would actually qualify. So I want to make sure I pointed that out. Thank you, sir.
Members, we're in questions. Any other members have questions? Seeing none, Director, I do have a couple for you myself.
Yes,
you had talked about when we get aid from other states, and my assumption has always been that that's governed by a pre-existing MOU. But my question is, does Florida reimburse those states? Does the Fed reimburse them? How does that work in terms of what those states are spending their dollars on here in Florida?
Thank you for the question, Chair. Again, like I mentioned with the Vice Chair, we have to pay the money out before we get reimbursed in. So when they come to our state, and again, as I said, for Hurricane Ian, 33 different states came to our state to assist us, and we do that through the Emergency Management Assistance Compact. All 50 states, all four territories, and several tribes are members of the EMAC process. Both the Seminole and Miccosukee tribe are members of that, and they assist us quite frequently on in-state state mutual aid. The state of Florida has gone outside the state once to the Cherokee Band of Oklahoma and helped out on a disaster there about 3-4 years ago. But to the heart of the question, yes, we have to reimburse all of these states that respond to us, get tidy up all that paperwork, and then we can submit to FEMA for reimbursement on that. So the state of Florida, as long as cities and counties request that mutual aid assistance through WebEOC, up to our division, we reimburse, and we will take on the burden of 100% of all public safety-related mutual aid and all electrical mutual aid in the state of Florida. That's a policy shift change that came with the governor, and the governor certainly leads in that area. That helps fast forward the recovery process when a city or a county that would be typically, they have to pay out all of that. So if you take I'll use Jacksonville Electric Authority since I know them well. Jacksonville Electric Authority to go in and do all the repairs that may happen for a Cat 3, 4, 5 system into Jacksonville. They're going to depend on a whole lot of people to come from out of state to do that. Typically, they would have to pay all of that up front and before they ever get a reimbursement dollar from any of us. The state of Florida now helps out our municipal electric authorities as well as our cooperative electric authorities to get that stuff done up front.
Okay, thank you. And I did have just two more. Second question, I'm curious, now that we have established the State Guard in Florida, and this may be a better question for their executive director, but I'd love to get your thoughts on it if you care to offer any. What role have they played in assisting your agency, and has that been, are those bugs being worked out as far as who does what or how that works? Has that been a success? How has the State Guard worked to help you in times of disasters?
I believe it was Hurricane Idalia was our first implementation of the full call-up of the Florida State Guard. So we used every individual at the Florida State Guard in this particular disaster. It was extremely beneficial because we were able to impact a fiscally constrained area with actual boots on the ground to help get things done. They did everything from points of distribution, handing out food, water, ice, to route clearance, to even providing planning assistance inside of the state EOC. So for every boot that we put on the ground doing that, that was one less contract vendor or one less municipal, county, or state employee that had to go fill that role. So we had tremendous success with the Florida State Guard being deployed in Hurricane Idalia, and we look forward to their continued growth and their continued partnership to help us keep the costs down in future disasters.
Thank you. Last question. I know you've been doing this for over 30 years. Kevin Guthrie finds a lamp on the beach, dusts the sand off, the genie pops out, and you get two wishes. The first wish, or the first question, is you could change any federal law, regulation, rule, and the second one is you could change any state law, regulation, rule to help make your job easier. Any thoughts as to what you would change in the federal or state system to help you?
Yeah, so this will not be, when FEMA sees this will not cause them any panic, because I've said it time and time again. The one thing that we have got to fix at the federal level is a data sharing agreement. It takes us weeks, if not months, to get a data sharing agreement. So FEMA has a portal where every person goes and applies for FEMA assistance, but we have to actually work post-disaster. This should be a pre-disaster activity. I'll stop there. But post-disaster, we have to work on getting all of these approvals to share that data with the state of Florida. And then if I get that blessing and Volunteer Florida wants it, they got to do a data sharing agreement with Volunteer Florida. And then if ACA needs it, they got to do a data sharing agreement with ACA. And yes, you guessed it. If they need to go to Miami-Dade, and then it's 60-something municipalities, they have to do a data sharing agreement with every single entity downstream. That is a very bureaucratic process. I'm going to be honest. I've got a very technical term. It's very stupid that we have that type of process. Those are things that we should, if we can work out billions of dollars in funding agreements before we ever have a disaster, we can figure out how to do a data sharing agreement before a disaster. So that's the one thing that I would change at the federal level. The next thing I would change, I would contemplate at the state level is to continue to see how we can speed up the process. So that's more of a comprehensive, and I know that's not necessarily answering your question, Chair, about what law could we change. I think we've got to look at all of our laws holistically and see where we are internally building stumbling blocks and hurdles that are just unnecessary. And how can we, again, when your cities and your counties have a disaster, what they need more than anything from us is money. Before I started the division, it took us about 450 days to pay out a single dollar to anyone. We had situations like, again, the governor and his leadership changed us on day one of his administration. We used to make every city and county do 100% of their validation and audit before we paid them a single penny. We don't do that anymore. We have changed some things internal, again, with the governor's leadership. We have taken on some things here at the Division of Emergency Management where we are now being proactive and preparing for recovery, and we're getting our cities and counties to do activities that prepare them for recovery. But I think we need to look holistically, not just at the Florida Division of Emergency Management, but through all of our agencies to see if there's hurdles and whatnot that keep us or prevent us from speeding up that recovery process. We cannot have a Hurricane Andrew where it takes individuals in Hurricane Ian 25 years, 3 weeks, and one day to recover and close that disaster. We need to be closing these disasters out in 5 to 7 years.
Okay. Sir, we're gonna let you get back to your real job. And wanted to thank you for coming here and taking the time out of managing yet another state emergency to educate the committee. And just, you know, one moment of personal privilege, want to thank you for all you've done for my community. And I think this committee is, and I think every Floridian should be proud to have you at the helm of this agency. With that, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate you, sir.
Members, this concludes our committee agenda for today. If you have further questions, I'm going to encourage you to reach out to the LAD there. And see no further business before the committee this morning. Representative Lopez moves that we rise without objection. This committee is adjourned.